Barbarian tribes of Rome, the Germanic halls and houses. Now, the royal halls, or the mead halls, if you will, of the epic, should not be regarded as representing accurately the normal living quarters of the Germanic people. They were built for a special purpose, to serve as a dining hall, and also a sleeping room for the leader's followers. They were designed also as assembly halls where the king or the chieftain could preside at the feast. We have some very accurate descriptions of the halls of the 7th century. The Royal Hall of the Beowulf epic was a quadrilateral wooden structure with a raised platform along either side within, and in the center on one side a high seat, the royal throne, and a secondary high seat on the other side opposite. This was the guest of honor. In front of these and along the length of the hall were long tables made of trestles, and heavy planks were laid upon them. These tables were easily removable. The chief's retainers slept at night on the raised platforms, with their equipment hanging above them on the wall, ready for use in an instant. The king himself had a separate house and a sleeping place. In the center of the hall was a blazing hearth and the dogs who fought for the remnants of the feast. It must have been a stirring scene when the carven cups were being freely filled and the great horns were being emptied and the scope was relating the deeds of some mighty hero amid the loud applause and the thumping on the wooden tables. It's no wonder that the poets were enthusiastic when describing such a scene. It's no wonder that even the Christian poet of the Beowulf is carried away in his enthusiasm for the good old days and becomes really eloquent with an apparent disregard for the more sober practices and teaching of the new religion. This royal banquet hall, this erot of the Beowulf, was not an Anglo-Saxon hall. It was of Denmark, and probably of the 6th century. Many of these halls, such as described in the Lay of Finnsburg, were eventually destroyed by fire in the continual tribal wars and feuds of those days. One of the most dramatic tales of house burning in a family feud is that of the burning of Njal's house in the saga of Njal. But that was a dwelling house, not a hall. Yet the action can be taken as a model for the story of the burning of another hall, a most capacious structure, large enough to hold 1,000 men. That was the huge hall of Attila, when the Burgundian brothers with Hagen and a small group of followers fought to the last rafter on the roof of the burning hall and literally almost to the last of their blood, for the survivors in the agony of thirst were brusquely told by the dour and fated Hagen to quench their thirst with the blood of the dead. That was a mighty hall and a mighty combat. True, it occurs in an epic poem, but there must have been many models that the poet could have used as a guide. We have also the story of the burning of the house of Signe's husband and Signe's self-immolation after her work of revenge was accomplished. That too was poetry. But the burning of the house of Njal was a brutal fact. There were plenty of models. The problem of the nature of the dwelling houses of the Germanic people during the pre-Roman and Roman Iron Age is complex. There was a great variety of structures. These varied from the times and locality. They have had to be excavated and reconstructed, and naturally there is some variation of opinion on that matter. Generally speaking, the presence of the forest in the north determined to a very great extent the nature of the construction of the dwelling houses, at least in respect to shape and material. A typical northern house was of a rectangular construction, with walls of upright posts and intervening spaces being filled with interwoven branches and twigs, and then smeared with clay, which, when dried, had the same effect as modern stucco. The roofs were thatched with grass or straw. Some of these houses, those belonging to the wealthier and more important members of the community, were fairly large, and certainly far beyond the dugout shelter of the dung-covered roof. This does seem, however, to have continued to be built, and probably used as storerooms for winter supplies of food, surplus accommodation, workrooms, and possibly as dwelling places for the less fortunate of the population. One method of house construction was that of the house or group of houses constituting a farm housing unit for both human occupants and stock. A type can still be seen in northern Europe, especially in Lower Saxony. Sometimes houses of this nature were built on artificial mounds, and Germany describes as Wurtensendlingen. It was made of spaced, upright posts with a steep thatched roof borne by long rafters, with walls of woven branches or reeds and covered with adhesive clay. These structures had to be roomy enough to shelter all the cattle. provide storage facilities and living quarters. Since they were built with regard to the possibility of the surrounding land being flooded by storm waves from the North Sea, it will be recalled that there was considerable variation in the relative levels of land and water in northern Europe after the beginning of the recession of the ice. In the North Sea coast area, this area did not remain the same. At times, a sinking of the water level or a rise in the level of the land had a very serious effect upon the inhabitants of these areas. Toward the end of the former era and during the early part of the present, the coastal districts in this part of Europe were often subjected to severe flooding, which made it necessary, when there were no natural mounds available, to construct artificial mounds on which the dwelling places were erected. Another type of house of a unitary nature, that is, designed to provide accommodation for both men and beast, is dated about the beginning of the present era. The construction principle is that of upright logs or posts for walls, long rafters crossing at the top, thatched roofs, with the main entrance at the side, accommodation for the cattle in one part of the building and living quarters in the other, with an exit in the roof for the smoke from the hearth. These houses appear to have had saddle roofs, the interior being divided into three parts by two rows of upright posts. The side areas contained stalls for the cattle. The living room was divided off from the remainder by the wall. This tradition of house construction has survived right down the present in the parts of northwestern Germany. The round house was not unknown, but appears to have occurred more frequently in western and southern Europe. It seems to have been a type of house favored by the Celts, or possibly the pre-Celtic population, since similar structures have been found from Neolithic times. In that case, this method of construction would have been taken over by the Germanic intruders, such as the Marcocomanni, from the local inhabitants. A scene of the Marcus Column depicts Roman soldiers setting fire to a Germanic village composed of houses of this round type. A similar construction than some of the houses described above is that of the Bergdorf, a Saxon settlement. This is a plain log hut with a thatched roof at an angle of about 45 degrees, designed as a simple accommodation for a family of no great pretensions. Roman writers such as Strabo and Pliny speak of this type of Germanic house, which could be loaded on wagons and set up in a new place. These were undoubtedly a very similar construction, and only the basic materials would be moved. Such houses would be used for temporary residence, mainly during time of war, or temporary tribal settlement. They are clearly not farmhouses. So it's an interesting look at the types of Germanic buildings that were available. Now, the source for this: The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owens, Civilization of the Celts by Launay, Civilization of the Steppes by Conrad. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.